Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. And Mike, it's actually been a little while since we had you last on the show, a little over a month. And the main market moves that we continue to see is investors shying away from growth and trading more into some of the safer money assets, some of the more defensive stocks. It is a rotation. However, we are just continuing to see the stocks that carried the markets higher not doing well at all. And that's resulting in, unfortunately, the market still in this choppy pattern. Do you see this continuing, Mike? Give us your takeaways of just how volatile and how different this year has been so far.
Sure. I mean, if you look at sort of historically, I mean, I've looked at some good studies going back decades of what quote unquote should be doing well at this phase of the economic cycle and what shouldn't be. That's exactly what you're seeing happen in the market. By that, I mean, we're late in the economic cycle. The Fed, we're at the point where inflation is surging. The Fed is going to have to tighten in response. We're seeing all kinds of signs of you know, capacity being stretched, supply chains being stretched. This is all stuff that happens at the end of an economic cycle, not the beginning when you're just coming out of recession. So in that kind of environment, what investors historically have done is flock to the stuff that's going to still be able to hold its value, the companies that are still going to be able to make money once the Fed tightens the screws and the economy begins to slow dramatically and or falls into recession. So if you look at, you know, I look at my new highs list, or I look at sectors in the S&P and what's hitting new highs every day, and it's utilities, it's consumer staples, it's REITs. And when I look at things that are lagging badly, it's things like technology. It's sectors that you know, before, if you were to dial the clock back a year, you couldn't give some of these outperforming sectors away, and you couldn't, you know, pry a tech stock out of somebody's cold, dead hands. But now you're in a situation where they're giving tech stocks away. You have, you know, stocks like Netflix, which fall $120 in a day, and companies like Meta or Facebook that, you know, just can't get out of their own way. Whereas you have things like Duke Energy and other utilities, some of which I've recommended and some of which I own personally, that have just been on fire. So I think that just, again, it goes to show you that the types of stuff that should be doing very well right now, you know, those types of investments are doing very well for investors. And the types of things that historically shouldn't do very well are, in fact, doing exactly that. They're underperforming. I would add, of course, since we talk about precious metals here, metals, gold miners, those are very much late cycle investments too. So it's no surprise that you have something like the GDX, the gold miners ETF, that's, you know, beating the tech ETF or the QQQ by like 40 percentage points in the last, you know, year to date, and, you know, something like 30% or whatever in the last 12 months. I mean, that just tells you everything you need to know right there.
How sustainable is this run then, Mike? Because we started to see this rotation at the tail end of last year. The Fed, which we do need to discuss, is going to continue down this rate hiking path for what seems like at least a few more hikes, maybe even through this whole year. Does that mean this trend is going to be in place throughout 2022?
Yeah, I mean, I've been telling my subscribers for months that this is going to happen and that you should continue to ride it. I mean, we've definitely been involved in safe money sectors and we've enjoyed some nice outperformance because of that. And I honestly don't think this is over. I mean, if you look, let's go back to the year 2000, right? That was when the tech bubble reached its apex and then started to pop. If you were invested in tech, it was a horrible year. You lost 40%, give or take, that year. And then you know, went on to lose another 40% until the market bottomed. But in the year 2000, if you just owned something like the XLU, which is the utilities ETF, or the REIT ETF, IYR at the time, you made 22% that year. So the performance gap between by the end of the year for calendar year 2000, by the end of the year was 60 percentage points roughly in favor of safe money sectors like REITs and utilities. Now, I'm not saying we're in a similar dot-com crash environment now, but we have had an environment where, you know, everybody's been infatuated by all this newfangled tech. They've been dogpiling into all these crappy stocks that don't have any earnings and that are now blowing up. You know, you have these ARK investments and so on, that these kinds of ETFs that have taken in tremendous amounts of investor money and then set it on fire in the last year, you know, and so it is at least a sort of, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. That's kind of what you're having here. And I think that in light of that, the sort of performance gap there to me is probably not over, and especially again, when you look at like what the interest rate market's pricing in over the course of 2022, what the Fed is basically committed to doing, you know, it realized it made a horrendous mistake by not, you know, getting involved early, by not being preemptive. They're way behind the curve. It's costing Biden politically. It's costing them, you know, the Fed is getting bashed from left and right, and rightfully so. And so I think that they're going to be forced to basically slam on the brakes. And typically what happens when they do that is something goes through the windshield. So I think that that's likely what you're going to see here. So yeah, I think this rotation, again, it's come a long way in the last 6 to 9 months, but I think over the span of the rest of this year, it's absolutely going to be with us.
So this all ties into the, it seems like, never ending recession comments that we get from a larger number of commentators now on the market. Question being, can these defensive stocks, can utilities, REITs, even the gold stocks hold up if we do get that much larger market pullback and potential recession?
What tends to happen is eventually you move from like a late cycle environment to an actual recession. I am not one of the commentators who says we're in a recession now. I'm not seeing anything in the data or market behavior in either the bond or stock market that suggests we're in one now. It's more about what's going to happen over the next 12 to 18 months. You know, we recently inverted the yield curve, although we've come out of that a little bit in the last few weeks. That's a signal that doesn't mean you're immediately in recession. It tends to signal that it's coming down the pike, and the lag time has varied over different economic cycles. And again, what I see in terms of the sector performance is that we're not there yet, but probably in the next year, year and a half, we will be. So to me, you try and make the best and you try and profit from those late cycle sectors now, but you do want to keep in the back of your mind, this isn't going to last forever either. Eventually, we're going to probably tumble into recession, and that's when you have to get really defensive. But I mean, I think that's more of a concern for next year than it is for this year. And I think that as an investor, you definitely want to be making hay while the sun shines in these defensive, safe money, high yielding, outperforming stocks and sectors, because I think that they are still going to continue to shine for the rest of this year.
So what sort of yields would you look for in terms of high yielding investments, balancing out the fact that yields continue to rise broadly in the markets, 10 years still right around 2.85%, and the Fed's going to be hiking rates. So what sort of high yield are you looking for?
Sure. I mean, you know, you're not, are you getting yields in some of these stocks, dividend yields that are on the level of inflation? No, but you're also getting strong capital gains. So, you know, you are staying ahead of inflation when you put those two forces in there. But I mean, if I look at things that are in our last few Safe Money Report issues, I mean, I've got a stock like Canadian Natural Resources, which in the US is traded under CNQ on the New York Stock Exchange. Their dividend yield was about 3.6% when we put it into the model portfolio. And that stock's done nothing but go up. Obviously, as the name suggests, it's levered to the energy sector. I think Canadian stocks, especially as a U.S.-based investor, are going to do very well for you, because I think that naturally the resource-levered economy and some of the other advantages that Canada has in this world where so many resources are in questionable supply and are hard to get. You've got a country like Canada where everything from precious metals to oil to fertilizers and more, you know, it's going to benefit from a lot of the chaos, especially what you see in Europe. So that's a name that I like. You can find, you know, other companies. You know, Rio Tinto was another commodities levered company that I really like. You know, trades in the U.S. under RIO. I mean, their yield, once you factor in special dividends that have been paid, was more than 9%. So again, there are some names like that can work for you. And I think as long as you're in those sectors, you're in the right sectors, you're looking at those kinds of investments that, again, give you that dividend protection, that give you that recession resistance or late cycle appeal. Those are the kinds of things that can definitely work for you.
So what about the commodity sector then? It seems like you are focused on the commodity sector. It does provide that safety aspect, especially in this environment where it seems like all commodities are going higher and have recently set up higher broad trading ranges. Any individual commodities that you like over any others?
You know, still very much on the energy train there. I think that, you know, given the supply situation, still given even if China demand stabilizes as they come out of this latest sort of zero COVID ridiculous policy that they're pursuing and infections eventually go down, you're going to see some demand side kickers. I think, unfortunately, the situation in Europe is going to drag on. So you're not going to get, you know, a big influx of Russian supply. So energy companies that are levered to stable, reliable reliable sources, democratic governments, you know, the question where you don't have to worry about sanctions being an issue. So again, companies that are levered to, or that produce in the US, produce in Canada, produce in other stable locations, those to me are great. And precious metals, I really do think this environment, especially if you look at the yield curve continuing to flatten, if you look at the Fed being forced to put on the brakes, which tends to increase volatility, on top of just the inflation protection and everything else historically you've gotten from gold and silver, I would very much continue to be long that space. I mean, again, it's no surprise that year to date, things like the GDX are absolutely crushing the averages. And I don't think that that's going to change either. I think that if, after this sort of pause that refreshes, I would be very surprised if gold doesn't launch another assault at its all-time highs in the coming weeks and months.
So one thing that keeps coming up when you discuss commodities, resources in particular, is the Western world, US included, that continues to designate certain commodities, certain metals as critical for their economy, which means they're focused a bit more on domestic supply. How do you view different commodities, the investment narrative around that, when we do get that news out of large governments that certain elements, certain metals are considered critical?
Well, you know, I mean, look at things. We've had, what, a strategic petroleum reserve for many, many years now. I mean, at this point, given some of the concerns, not just about what's happening in Russia or Eastern Europe, but eventually what might happen on China with rare earths and things like that, you know, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities to see the US government try and establish stockpiles and other commodities, which kind of gives you a price insensitive type of buyer out there. And, you know, whether that's in energy adjacent commodities or other things out there that the country is going to need and the production sort of production chain is going to need, you know, that's one of those things that you definitely have to keep in the back of your mind. So there's a lot that I like, but I think, you know, again, those couple of sectors I mentioned are probably at the top of my list of favorites right now.
Let's talk about the bond market too, because a lot of people, a lot of the bond bashers out there are saying when the Fed steps away, now that the Fed has stepped away, there aren't going to be any buyers left for bonds for any of the new auctions, and that's going to cause rates to skyrocket. Rates have gone substantially higher, but we are still seeing large buyers come into the bond market. What's your take from just who's going to pull the weight when it comes to buying bonds?
Sure. I mean, we've seen probably one of the fastest, sharpest, greatest magnitude, whatever way you want to measure it, increases interest rates and decline in bond prices, bond fund assets, and so on, basically either in history or modern history, depending how you measure it. I've seen a bunch of different stats about it, which of course means that bonds are radically oversold. Bond yields relative to the yield on the S&P, you know, the advantage to bonds is the greatest it's been in a decade and a half. So there's a lot of things from a valuation and yield and relative yield, I should say, not to inflation, but relative yield to, say, the stock market. And then just things like technical issues, like the degree that which bonds are oversold and so on. All those things suggest we're very, very stretched in the short term. Do I think, you know, you want to be going out and putting all your money into bonds for the next generational leg of decline in price or rise in price and decline in yields? Not at these levels. But I think, you know, in the shorter term, we're seeing some exhaustion, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some vicious short covering or counter trend rallies, you know, in terms of bond prices. So I'd be on the lookout for that. Again, and I think one of the other things that from a long term, if you can look past the next year or two into sort of the next 5 or 10 years, we're still in an environment where assets are wildly overvalued. Debts have just continued to grow, and debt servicing costs, neither the economy nor the market can really handle anything like the interest rate levels we saw in the yield levels we saw in the early 80s or late 70s. I mean, if you tried to apply a 15% 30-year U.S. mortgage rate to today's average house price in the upper 300,000 range, it'd be catastrophic. You know, home sales would drop to like 5 a month or something around the country because they can't afford it, right? So I think that's why there's always a natural breaking point where just the economy, the housing market, the asset markets can't handle any more increase in interest rates. So I think putting on my very long-term hat, you know, all that demographic stuff, all those debt-driven issues that ultimately will cap interest rates haven't gone away, despite the fact, obviously, we've seen a very sharp rise and we're still facing pretty impressive inflation pressures here.
So, Mike, what market do you think will break first as these rates continue to move higher? You mentioned housing. I know a lot of people are saying that, but look, people just cannot withstand much higher rates when they are in that much debt. However, there can be a lag in terms of the housing market because rates can be locked in for different periods of time. Other markets also very impacted by higher rates. Where do you think it's going to break first?
Yeah, you know, I've been closely following and analyzing the real estate and mortgage market since the late 1990s. So I've been at, you know, focused on that sort of part of the markets for almost a quarter century. And what I've seen over and over is that because housing moves not at a glacial pace, but it's more like turning a battleship. You know, people who are hyperactive stock traders, when your stock can decline 20 or 30% in a day, they might be like, oh, what do you mean the housing market's slowing? I'm not seeing that yet. Well, no, because it doesn't happen overnight. There's built-in lags. There's, you know, sort of intellectual resistance to sellers. It's a lot when you're parting with a house that, you know, you want to sell for $500 and now your agent tells you it's worth $475. Gosh, it's really hard to let that go because you just quote unquote lost $25,000. Whereas if you hate a stock that's down 10 bucks, you have no problem really selling it. So you get a lot of psychological reasons. Sellers don't want to budge and you kind of hit a stalemate before you see the market slow. That's certainly what we saw in the mid 2000s. I'm not expecting a mid 2000s kind of meltdown in the housing market, but I do think a pretty notable slowdown, especially in radically overpriced markets, should be expected. And indeed, I'm starting to see little hints and bits and pieces that it's already happening. If you look kind of at some localized stats, some of the better blogs and data sources that I follow, I think you are starting to see that. And I absolutely expect over the span of the rest of this year and into next year, you're going to see, you know, if you were buying, I would just say, don't. My advice to somebody, if you can afford to wait, because, you know, you're not going to see house prices crash necessarily, but you are going to see, you know, a lot more inventory on the market. You're going to have better, you know, sellers that are willing to compromise. You're going to have better selection from property at different pricing and so on. And the thing is, with housing, I would rather buy a higher priced house with a high mortgage rate, I'd rather have a higher mortgage rate that I can ultimately refinance than get stuck buying a house at the absolute top of the market, no matter the rate. You know what I mean? I would rather say, okay, let's wait a year. Hopefully, even if rates go up a little bit more, the house might be valued at less. And then, you know, once I'm locked into that house price, I can always refinance 2, 3, 4 years down the road and cut my payment, than to do the other thing, other way around. So, I would just say, look, stay out of this market for now. Don't be a buyer if you can avoid it and just wait it out because you're going to have better selection and better opportunities over the next, you know, year.
Yeah, it seems like we are going to find out maybe this year, maybe next year, just how squeezed people are and how many have leverage themselves too high with their houses as these higher rates trickle in. We don't know what the answer is yet, but boy, oh boy, it's a very different world this year. I've said it a number of times this year, but it continues to be true for the financial markets and a lot of other aspects of daily life as well. Mike, thank you as always for your time, buddy. Great chatting with you. We'll chat again in a couple of weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Sounds good. Same to you.